Welcome to Onk Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onk Live On Air is a podcast from Onk Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onk Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Seagen, we had the pleasure of speaking with Terrence Friedlander, MD, about the FDA approval of enfortumab vedotin plus pembrolizumab in patients with locally advanced or metastatic urothelial carcinoma. Dr. Friedlander is Chief of Hematology Oncology and Associate Director for Cancer Research at Zuckerberg San Francisco General, Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center, as well as an Associate Clinical Professor in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of California, San Francisco. On April 3, 2023, enfortumab vedotin plus pembrolizumab received accelerated approval from the FDA for the treatment of patients with locally advanced or metastatic urothelial carcinoma who are ineligible for cisplatin-containing chemotherapy. This approval was backed by findings from the dose escalation A and K cohorts of the Phase 1-2 EV-103 KEYNOTE-869 trial. In these cohorts, treatment with the combination led to a confirmed objective response rate of 68%, consisting of a 12% complete response rate and a 55% partial response rate. Furthermore, the median duration of response was 22.1 months in the dose escalation cohort and cohort A, and not yet reached in cohort K. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Friedlander discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety data from EV-103, and the importance of incorporating such an active combination regimen into the frontline setting for this population. So just to start off talking about the FDA approval of enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab in urothelial carcinoma, what is the significance of this approval?
It's actually quite important. You know, in urothelial cancer, we've not had a new drug approved in the frontline setting with the exception of immune therapy in many, many years. The data that came out of this EV-103 study really pushes the bar in terms of efficacy, in terms of getting benefit to patients who are cisplatin ineligible with metastatic urothelial cancer. If you jump back 10 years ago, carboplatin-based regimens had about a 35-36% response rate, which was decent, but you know, the majority of patients didn't respond to chemotherapy in the frontline setting who were cisplatin ineligible. And in the EV-103 study, we've seen both in cohort A and cohort K that the response rates are 64% in cohort K and 73% in cohort A. So we're seeing sort of a consistent signal when you add EV and pembro together in the front line. That's pretty exciting. And it means the majority of patients will respond. And this was traditionally a sort of a poor prognosis group who had very limited options. So it's a real step forward, I think, for the field.
What are the mechanisms of action of these agents, and what was the rationale for combining them in this population?
So both enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab have been independently tested in large randomized trials in later line settings in bladder cancer. So enfortumab vedotin is an antibody drug conjugate. The antibody targets Nectin-4, which is expressed on the surface of urothelial cancer, as well as some targets in the body, healthy tissues like skin, for example. While the payload for the antibody drug conjugate is monomethyl auristatin E, which is a known chemotherapy drug, it's by itself fairly toxic, so it's hard to give it as a monotherapy. And what it does is it stabilizes microtubules, actually in very similar respects to how taxane chemotherapy works. So many of the side effects actually sort of mimic taxane chemotherapy in terms of neuropathy, for example. And some are different because this isn't a targeted drug that basically goes after cells that express Nectin-4. So when the antibody binds to the cell, the whole complex, the antibody, as well as the linker and the payload is internalized into the cell. The linker molecule, which connects the antibody to the chemotherapeutic drug, is dissolved in the cytoplasm of the cell, which releases the active drug. And then the active drug is free to go sort of paralyze these microtubules, and that results in cell death and apoptosis. There's some evidence, it's a little controversial, that when EV is given, that it sort of activates the immune system. It draws immune cells into the tumor microenvironment. And that really led to the connection to giving this drug with immune therapy, for example, pembrolizumab, which is a antibody that targets PD-1. PD-1 is a cell surface protein on immune cells and cancer cells. Most providers are familiar with it. and it helps to sort of stimulate the immune system to attack cancer. Because the EV, you know, may induce some immunogenic activity, the thought was perhaps combining these two active drugs together would give us, you know, some synergy, like we'd actually see more benefit than you'd expect if you gave them in series or you gave, you know, one followed by the other. That question of synergy is still not completely solved because we have data from just a couple hundred men who are treated with this combination. But I think that's a major area of research and focus going forward.
What were some of the key efficacy data from the A and K cohorts of EV-103?
From EV-103, we first had data coming out from cohort A, which was a dose escalation and expansion cohort, about 45 patients. All patients were cisplatin ineligible, frontline metastatic urothelial cancer, who had frontline metastatic urothelial cancer. And what we saw was a 73% response rate. That was sort of the first data out of the gate from cohort A. And I think most people were pretty impressed by that because, as I mentioned earlier, you know, carboplatin-based regimens, which are the standard of care, only have about a 36% response rate. So that was good to see in the initial data set, but, you know, response rate's really not everything. And what we looked at in the study was, in terms of the progression-free and the overall survival, that data sort of mimicked to what you'd expect. So we saw about a 12.3-month PFS. The DOR, the duration of response, was actually 25 months, so it was very long. The overall survival in that cohort A was 26.1 months. So, you know, over 2 years of survival. In the studies from 10 years ago, looking at carboplatin-based regimens, the overall survival was only 9 months. And so in this small cohort A, we saw 25 months overall survival. Again, small numbers, so I think you have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt. But it certainly was promising that perhaps giving these two drugs together is really engendering some sort of long-term control of the cancer. Cohort K followed on cohort A, and cohort K was a larger cohort that looked at EV plus Pembro in about 76 patients, and then EV alone in 73 patients, and they were separately run cohorts. They weren't really designed to be compared directly, just because the sizes weren't big enough. But what we saw was very similar results in terms of the response rate. So the response rate for the combination was 64.5%, which was, you know, pretty good. And sort of close enough to the 73% we saw in cohort A. So overall numbers were pretty similar when you account for these sort of small cohorts. In the monotherapy arm, the response rate was 45%. And that actually is very close or sort of mimics what we've seen in other studies of EV monotherapy in the second line and in the third line, including in the EV-301 trial, which was a randomized phase 3, where the response rate was in the 40% range. There's less long-term data from cohort K in terms of long-term outcomes, at least as of now. We're expecting more to be released at upcoming meetings. And so we may have more data to share fairly soon in terms of duration of response, PFS, and OS from cohort K. My sort of sense is that given that we've seen a very similar response rate for EV Pembro in cohort K as we're seeing in cohort A, that the longer-term outcomes will probably be similar. But obviously, we need to wait for the data to come out to see that for sure.
What does the safety profile look like for this combination?
There is real toxicity. As excited as I think everyone is about EV and Pembro, they have known side effects and they can be real and they can be serious. In cohort A, the most common side effects were sensory neuropathy, which occurs in about 50% of patients. Fortunately, most of the events were grade 1 and 2, so sort of mild to moderate. There are very few really serious sort of grade 3 and higher sensory neuropathy. The events. Fatigue was fairly common with this combination. As you might expect, this is real chemotherapy given in a targeted manner, and immune therapy has a known sort of contribution to causing fatigue. Alopecia was seen in a fair number of patients. Almost half of patients had alopecia, which is sort of consistent with the mechanism of action of MMAE and EV. The side effects that sort of concern me the most, in addition to the neuropathy, is the skin toxicity. So we saw different types of rashes, pruritus, things like that, that occurred depending on how we grade them according to the CTCAE criteria. In cohort A, for example, 35% of patients had maculopapular rashes, and another 33% had pruritus or itching. Dry skin was fairly common too. And that sort of jives with my experience treating patients on this trial, where it's not uncommon to see different types of rashes in these patients. There were a number of other sort of less common side effects, lab abnormalities with liver enzyme elevations, but fortunately, most of those were grade 1 and grade 2. There were very few serious adverse events outside of the rash that we've already talked about, which I think happened in about 10% of patients. We saw grade three or higher. So overall, I would say with the toxicity we saw in cohort A was pretty consistent with what we've seen for EV and for pembrolizumab as monotherapy. When you add them together, you might get some increased risk for toxicity, and that's not unexpected. Cohort K, in the big picture, I would say really kind of mirrored cohort A when we looked at the combination. Fatigue was reported in over 50% of patients. Sensory neuropathy, again, just over 50% of patients, but most of those were grade one and grade two, and then the rashes I've talked about. In cohort K, we saw grade three toxicity, I think in 17% of patients for rashes. So it is a real toxicity. And when I talk to providers who haven't used EV or haven't used this combination, I really try and emphasize that close attention to skin is really important because many patients will get this toxicity. And I think either knowing how to diagnose it and then how to treat it and how to do that quickly is really important.
How did adverse effects factor into treatment discontinuation rates in this study? And then are there any patients in whom you would hesitate to use this combination because of the safety profile?
Fortunately, it wasn't that common to see treatment discontinuation for side effects. In the dose escalation, cohort A, dose escalation, and dose expansion, very few patients withdrew just because of side effects. It was 11 patients, so 24% of the patients had treatment discontinuation due to side effects. Dose reductions happened in 31% of the patients in cohort A. And the numbers were fairly similar in cohort K. The sort of take-home message is really that most patients can tolerate this. A minority of patients will have, toxicity that really does mandate dose reduction. And some patients really will have to stop because of side effects like increasing neuropathy or skin side effects. Those are probably the two most common.
How does this combination and the approval of this combination fulfill some unmet needs in patients with urothelial cancer who are not eligible for cisplatin-containing chemotherapy? And how do you see this combination fitting into the treatment paradigm for these patients?
This regimen is very active for patients who have frontline metastatic urothelial cancer who aren't eligible for cisplatin. As we discussed a little bit, the standard of care for those patients has been historically to give carboplatin and gemcitabine or carboplatin-based regimens, and the response rates in the 30% range and overall survival was pretty poor in the pre-IO era. So what we've seen between cohort A and cohort K of the EV-103 trial is, response rates of 64, 73%, almost doubling of the historical rate. And so I have a hard time seeing why, if you had a patient who was completely eligible for a EV-pembro regimen or a carboplatin-based regimen, why you wouldn't pick the EV-pembro regimen when you know that you're going to have a fairly good chance at having a response. And, there's a disease control rate, that sort of keeps the disease stabilized for another maybe 20% of patients. So there's a fairly good chance of patients responding to this. It also allows patients to get a PD-1 therapy. We talked a lot about EV. We haven't talked so much about PD-1 therapy. It allows patients to get the PD-1 therapy early in the treatment course. We know from KEYNOTE-045 and other major trials of PD-1 therapy that about 20% of patients who get PD-1 inhibitors with advanced urothelial cancer will have long-term durable responses. And I've seen that personally. I've seen patients, responding to PD-1 therapy for many years, and it's incredibly satisfying to treat a patient and see that happen. And so rather than the current paradigm where patients get upfront chemo, we stop the chemo and then consider giving maintenance PD-1 or PD-L1 therapy like avelumab, or wait for progression and then give them a PD-L1 therapy or PD-1 therapy in the second line, we're now really moving the PD-1 therapy up. And so patients not only get a good chance at having a response, and that's, I think, a large part in due to the EV, but they're also getting access to the PD-1 therapy earlier. And that means we're catching patients earlier and really getting the therapy to them earlier. And that's really good. We know in urothelial cancer that of all patients who are diagnosed with advanced disease, almost a quarter never get treated for urothelial cancer because they're too sick or they don't have access to care. And then once you look at patients who actually get frontline therapy, almost 50% of them never get to the second line for very similar reasons. The disease progresses rapidly. And so there's a sort of a logic to giving EV and pembro early on, really trying to kind of put your best foot forward, really, and give your sort of very active agents up front. And we'll obviously see how that bears out in larger phase three trials in the setting. But it intuitively makes sense to really be aggressive with patients up front with a regimen that's, tolerable with some known toxicity.
Looking forward, what is the rationale for the EV-302 study?
The EV-302 study is a randomized phase 3 trial that's looking at the combination of EV and pembrolizumab, the same regimen, and it's comparing it to cisplatin-based chemotherapy or carboplatin-based chemotherapy. So the study is very broad, looking at frontline metastatic disease. The goal of the study is to really understand how does this compare in a randomized way, in a statistically valid way against chemotherapy. All the data that we have for EV and pembro to date has been in phase 1, phase 2 studies that are sort of monotherapy. And so there's always concerns that there may be some bias in smaller studies like this. You may select healthier patients. And so this EV-302 study will test in a very large set of patients, how well does this combination perform? There's sort of two opportunities here. There's one is to show that EV pembro is better than carboplatin-based regimens. The other opportunity is to show that it's better than cisplatin-based regimens. And that could have potential not just for those cisplatin-ineligible patients, but for all patients with metastatic disease. And so we'll see how that data comes out in the near future, because that can really tell us whether EV pembro will be the sort of go-to frontline regimen for all patients, or whether it only be for patients who are, for example, cisplatin ineligible.
Those are all the questions that I have for you today, but is there anything else about this study or this approval that you'd like to talk about before we close?
I think this is a pretty exciting time in urothelial cancer. We haven't had a major phase 3 study in the frontline setting be positive in a long time. We're waiting for EV-302 as the phase 3 study, but the data that I think is important is that the EV response data has been remarkably consistent across different lines of therapy. And that, gives me some more confidence when using EV in the front line, even though it's based on phase 2 data and monotherapy studies without a randomized comparator to chemo, it gives me a lot of confidence that what we're seeing is very likely true, that there is really a lot of activity of this combination. And a lot more comfort in using that regimen in patients who have frontline metastatic disease who are cisplatin ineligible.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air, sponsored by Seagen. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at EnclaveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave on Air.